The New Deal created a wide range of jobs programs to put Americans back to work during the Great Depression, including out-of-work writers. Some of those authors working under the Federal Writers Project were tasked with putting together travel guides for every state in the Union, along with many cities. When the American Guide series started to get published in the 1930s, it was clear the books were more than sightseeing checklists. They dove into social history, personal stories. Ultimately, they created a time capsule of American society at one of the country's toughest points. Scott Borchert is author of the book Republic of Detours, How the New Deal Paid Broke Writers to Rediscover America. Scott, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob, for having me. I'm glad to be here.
You've read through a lot of these guides, and they're a unique artifact. They're not, it doesn't sound like your usual rah-rah travel guide. They're kind of literature, they're history.
Right.
Tell us what we find when we crack the cover.
Sure. So I have here actually a copy of the Wisconsin Guide, and this book itself is 651 pages long. So these are pretty hefty, hardcover books. If you open one up, they have a uniform structure. So this is true of all of the state guidebooks. But if you open them up, it starts out with a section of essays. And these are essays on, you know, history, industry, folklore, all kinds of things. Some of them are unique to the state. Like in Wisconsin, there's an essay on the cooperative movement. So it's not necessarily something that, you know, if you were just traveling down the road, you felt like you needed to learn about. But if you did want to learn about that, it's all right in there. And then next in the guidebook, there's a section of profiles of like major cities. It's kind of tell you what's there, the history of the city and that sort of thing. And then the really interesting stuff comes at the end. The last third of all these guidebooks are the tour sections. And this seems very straightforward. It just says, you know, you start in one spot, get in your car, drive to the next spot. It'll tell you what you see along the way. But these tours are just jam packed with all sorts of weird, obscure history and local lore, you know, unusual characters, myths and legends and stories that may be true or may not be true. So, it's the kind of thing, you know, if you're driving in your car, it might not be very helpful if you're trying to find a restaurant or just a place to pull over. But it's totally fascinating if you're just traveling to a new area and you want to hear what it's all about, or if you're just sitting at home and reading about a place that you'd like to visit someday.
And these books were published for a few years, went off the market, became collector's items. And Scott, you ended up with a treasure trove. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's right. So I had a great uncle who was kind of an eccentric book collector. He started collecting these guidebooks, you know, soon after they were published in the 1940s when he was still kind of a young man. And he spent the rest of his life collecting them and all the other publications that were created by the Federal Writers Project. There are about 1,000, it's estimated, that were created during the life of the project before it was dissolved in 1943. And when my great uncle died, this is in 2005, he had about almost 400 of them. So he had a pretty big collection. And most of them were sold off to other book collectors who were looking for these kind of things. They're pretty rare. But the core set of state guidebooks ended up with me. And I had these sitting around for a while. And it was just so fascinated by them. You know, every time I would open one and find something really interesting or surprising. And then I started to actually research what the project was all about, how it was started, you know, as part of this New Deal program of creating jobs for people during the Depression, and I just became totally, you know, smitten with it.
Now, it's a complicated story in some ways. You go into some detail about it, but give us the basics. How did the New Deal end up scrambling to recruit writers all over the country to tell these stories?
Yeah, sure. So early on in the Roosevelt administration, you know, they were providing relief to people directly, like in the form of cash payments, usually, or other things, just to meet, you know, the crisis of the Depression. And pretty soon they decided that what would be better would be to give people jobs, because then people could still work, they could still conserve the skills that they had, and they could contribute something useful to society. There are all these projects that needed to get done and weren't happening. And so they created, there are a few other, you know, relief agencies before this, but the Works Progress Administration in 1935 was the big one. And most of the work that the WPA did had to do with building like physical infrastructure, like roads and sewers and airports and that sort of thing. But they decided that they wanted to expand it into other areas and also create jobs for cultural workers. So they had this thing called Federal Project Number One, and there were projects for writers, for artists, musicians, and for theater people. And, you know, the idea was that these are all people who needed work, you know, like everyone else during the Depression, they were really desperate. They needed something just to keep them alive. But they had these special skills that they'd used for possibly a whole career. And the government didn't want to see those, you know, be destroyed during the Depression. And they thought that they could get some really unique and valuable work out of them if they put them to these different, you know, cultural tasks.
We're talking to Scott Borchert about his book, Republic of Detours, How the New Deal Paid Broke Writers to Rediscover America. Looking at the Federal Writers Project and the unique books that came out of it. And Scott, you write that, you know, for a lot of writers coming into this time, the cool thing to do was to go to Europe and write about Europe. And this project ended up being part of this movement to look inward and really discover, and as you say in your subtitle, rediscover America. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. Yeah. For a long time, you know, in the first decades of the 20th century, for a lot of writers and other kinds of artists, Europe was kind of the standard, and everyone was fixated on Europe and, you know, classical antiquity. And the idea was that the United States didn't really have the same kind of depth of culture. There wasn't as much going on here. It wasn't as sophisticated or something to emulate. But that all started to change for a lot of different reasons. It was kind of a broader cultural trend, this renewed interest in American history and cultural heritage. It was all kind of going on those first couple of decades. But then with the Depression, it just sort of, I think, sent everyone into this, you know, new phase of wondering, like, you know, we need new answers to the questions that are out there. The old answers aren't working. The whole kind of like assumptions we have about our society and the government, the economic order and everything like that are kind of crumbling in front of our eyes. So the best thing to do is to go back and look at the past, look at, you know, the textures of American culture and see if there are new answers there that we can find. So for a lot of different reasons, you had writers kind of returning to, you know, their home territory and taking a really close look at it and trying to see if they could use it for their fiction or poetry or to write new forms of journalism or take, you know, like photo essays and cover what their fellow citizens were doing and what they're going through during the Depression.
There's a lot of writers involved in this. And as you see in the book, some famous, some less so, some very talented, some less so. What kind of tones do we get out of this as all these different authors are going to all these different places?
Yeah, it's really funny because if you go back and look in the archival material, I mean, there's mountains and mountains of stuff in the National Archives and the Library of Congress. And a lot of it's online today, too, so people can access it and check it out. And they really should. It's really interesting. But you can see some of this original material that writers who go on to great things later were writing at the time, like Richard Wright, Margaret Walker's also in Chicago with Richard Wright at first. Richard Wright went to New York City. There are a bunch of other great writers there. John Cheever was working on the New York City guidebook for a little bit. But a lot of the stuff all kind of got evened out to a certain extent during the process of creating these books, because it really was a collective process from the very bottom to the top. So you'd have writers, you know, in every state across the country going out to their communities, surveying what they found, writing up little profiles of, you know, local people, stories, history, what kind of factories there were in the area, what kind of crops they grew, like basically everything. That would all get fed back into the state offices. They'd work on it, create a manuscript, send it to Washington. They'd work on it there. There's a lot of back and forth. So by the time you got a finished manuscript, you had something that probably, you know, 10, 20 people had been involved in terms of writing and editing and rewriting. So you can't always trace, you know, what an individual person was doing. But it is pretty remarkable because when you look at the guides, there is this voice to them. So you think sometimes you're reading just something written by a very interesting, quirky, sort of eccentric writer from the 30s, but you're actually looking at the product of, you know, many people.
What's it like to go back in, you know, 2021 and get this firsthand view of maybe our hometown or our home state in the midst of the Depression?
Yeah, it's really fascinating because the guidebooks were supposed to be, you know, they weren't necessarily a snapshot of the Depression. They're supposed to be, you know, the whole history of a place up to that point. So there's a lot going back, you know, the last two centuries or whatever. But it's inevitable that so much from the Depression comes into it. So you'll see in a tour, it'll be talking about, you know, some historical tavern where something, you know, notable happened in 1850 or whatever. And then it'll say right around the corner, there's a, you know, Civilian Conservation Corps camp. And these people had just started going out there and clearing trails or something like that. So you can kind of see the active, you know, measures that the Roosevelt administration was taking at the time woven in through these guides. It's just really fascinating. But then there are also little reminders of just the hardship that people were going through at the time. And just the kind of devastation that the Depression was, you know, having across the country in all different ways, from, you know, farms, you know, going under during the Dust Bowl to just cities where all these, you know, relief agencies were popping up and that sort of thing. Like, you know, it's completely inevitable that you see that in the guides.
We had this unprecedented investment in writers as well as artists and others from the federal government in these relief programs. There was a brief moment, Scott, where there was talk and an effort in Congress to make it a permanent thing. That is not the road we traveled. Why did this end?
Yeah, so this was a very popular program for a while for a lot of people, but there were always the critics from the beginning who were opposed to the idea of the federal government getting into any kind of, well, for the first part, getting into any kind of direct employment of people. A lot of people were opposed to that just in principle, but also getting into the cultural industry. And they thought it was ridiculous that the government was hiring people to write guidebooks when they could ostensibly be doing more important things. But, you know, it was all part of this general plan to address the Depression and to find work for people. But some people were just never, some critics, I should say, would never be convinced that this was so. And the other thing was that they knew that a lot of people who were working for these cultural projects that are part of the New Deal were political radicals, including people who were in the Communist Party or in the orbit of the Communist Party, which, you know, for the 1930s was not exceptional at all. You had millions of people who, you know, considered themselves on the left in some way, whether they were party members or not. It was kind of a cultural moment. So they all played active roles in these projects, as they were totally allowed to, according to the law. But for a lot of people who were critical of the projects to begin with, this was sort of the ultimate sin, and they couldn't stand for it. So there was a committee that was formed in Congress by Martin Dies, who's a Democratic congressman from Texas. And this was the first iteration of the House Un-American Activities Committee. And they really focused, I mean, they investigated all kinds of things, but they really focused on the Federal Writers Project and the Federal Theater Project, because I think they thought these were kind of like the soft cultural underbelly of the New Deal. And so they could strike a blow against the entire New Deal program by targeting these projects, making it seem like they were overrun by radicals and communists and, you know, just complete waste of taxpayer dollars. So that's what happened. They investigated the project to kind of, the story of the project really built to this crescendo with these hearings in late 1938. And then in 1939, Congress, you know, had been becoming increasingly hostile to certain parts of the New Deal and the Works Progress Administration specifically. And so they voted to get rid of the Federal Theater Project, and they kind of changed the structure of the Federal Writers Project, where it was no longer a sort of central national organization. It was kind of broken down to a state-by-state basis. The director, this guy, Henry Allsberg, who I write about in the book, who's kind of this visionary and interesting, eccentric figure, he was fired from the project. And it just never quite recovered after that.
Scott, thanks a lot for sharing the story with us today.
Sure. No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Scott Borchert joined us for a look at his new book, Republic of Detours, How the New Deal Paid Broke Writers to Rediscover America.